Hi everyone, I'm just flying through the office. Got to get to Sochi. So I thought for this one, I'm going to put up an interview. Somebody just interviewed me called Becca Taylor, which is Driving Bex on YouTube. And she's got this 20 questions where she talks to people in the industry, asks them 20 questions, 10 of them are random quick fire and 10 are more in depth about the person. So she goes into, how I coach, how I started coaching, driving, and all these things. And I think it'd be of interest to you. So here's the interview. I'll see you when I get back from Sochi. Enjoy.
And welcome back to 20 Questions With. And today's guest is a peak performance coach, also known as Enzo Mucci. Hiya, Enzo. Thank you for joining me.
Hello. Thanks for having me. This is different. I'm looking forward to this.
How are you? How's your week been so far?
Good. We got back from Monza late Sunday. Wow. So I think I've recovered from that. It was a bit of a tough one with the F2 driver. And I've just been recording videos, and actually today, I don't know if you've done the same, but I'll watch the Schumacher Netflix.
I've saved it ready to watch later.
Yeah, and I'm just literally just editing now a video that sort of reviews it and takes like seven lessons from it, basically. So that's what I've been doing today. And then tomorrow is Hockenheim. So back on the road, ready to do Italian F4. No, sorry, German F4 with Behrmann. So it's quite busy at the minute.
It sounds very exciting, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's all title deciding, so we've got to keep it clean.
Keep it clean, keep fighting.
That's it, you got it. Yeah.
So if you're okay to start, we'll start with the 10 quick fire questions.
Go for it.
So yeah. You're ready?
Yeah.
So your favourite car?
Your Toyota Supra.
Oh.
Just because I had one and it was a drift machine.
That sounds very cool. And your favourite track?
I would say it's got to be Monza, but anything really that's kind of old school. So when you go there, you get the kind of the feeling that it's got heritage and Imola, actually. Let's just say Imola. Sorry.
A bit of history behind it.
Yeah.
And cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Your go-to three-course meal?
It's a salad to start, which is really boring. A big fat juicy steak with chips and then chocolate ice cream.
That's not too bad. And your most inspirational driver?
Senna. Schumacher's like really behind him now. I just watched that documentary.
Oh, I'll be intrigued to watch that now.
Brilliant. It is cool.
And if you had to choose another sport apart from motorsport, what would it be?
Boxing.
And morning or evening person?
Morning.
Your go-to hobby, apart from anything car-related?
Oh, no. So I can't say simulator, can I? This is a good one. I'm going to say surfing, but I haven't done it for 2 years. But it used to be my go-to, but I just moved away from the sea a little bit.
Still counts.
Yeah.
And the scariest thing you've ever done?
Scariest thing I've ever done is this interview.
You're not the first person to say that.
Damn it. I can't think of anything else. Asking a girl out, maybe.
And if you had to describe yourself in one word, what would it be?
Passionate.
Good word. So you survived the first 10 questions.
Done it.
Not too scary.
Doesn't even halfway, does it?
Perfect. So if you're happy to, we'll go on to the bit more in-depth questions and find out a bit about yourself in motorsport.
Yeah, shoot. Go for it.
So let's start where it all began. What actually got you into motorsport?
Well, I just liked anything that had a motor, to be fair. To start with, it was quadding. I just found quads in like Sunday market, and straight away, just competing on a machine was I felt at home. It was like, wow, this is amazing. Then you're on it every single time. I liked little cars as well growing up. I collected cars to death. But then I would say the last year of school, I really wanted to be like a quad racer or some kind of racer. And I think it was just dad watching F1. you know, that got me into cars, really. I can't remember the actual first part, but then there was this scholarship for Formula Ford, and everybody was invited, a bit like what you're doing, actually. And the winner got a full season of racing.
Wow.
And I was too young to actually win it. I think I was 15, but they still said, come along, have a go. And I did. I still competed, and I was terrible. You know, missing gears everywhere because it was a H pattern box. Didn't know what I was doing, to be fair. But still, it bit me. And from that moment on, 15 years onwards, everything else took a backseat. You know, it was even school. I didn't even care about it. Flunked the exams on purpose, pretty much, because all I cared about was racing. And there's nobody really to show you the career path.
Yeah,
you completely confuse the school when the career advisor comes and you say race driver, so they just put mechanic. But that inspires you even more then, you know, when it's something out of the ordinary. And then it took quite a few years to save money to really understand how to get into it. And I was probably, I think 17 when I got my race license and 19 when I started driving in Formula Fords. So I did that for a couple of years, won that championship in the second year, and then moved into coaching about 4 or 5 years after that. I was kind of driver coaching, normal driver coaching at the same time, but my true love, really, I didn't even know at the time, was coaching. So the driving was, it was okay, but the love sort of dwindled. And when you start to make a difference in other people's lives, and I'm probably better at it, to be fair, the coaching than the driving, it just completely took over from it. And coaching, I'd say 2004 onwards was when I really hit it hard, and that's all I did.
So it's where you really found your passion was within coaching.
Yeah, 100%. And it's coaching outside, you know, sports people and life coaching. It was, you make a difference, and it's that's addictive, to be fair.
You're having an impact on someone's life for the better. Yeah. And it is really rewarding for yourself.
It is. Yeah. So you win, you cross the line in a race car, and it's great. But I think what I looked forward to more was the celebrating with the team when you got back. And that kind of towers you, doesn't it? What turns you on? It's more of a people thing. So I think when you contribute and you've got things bigger than just yourself, you don't usually find that out till later in life, you know, with family and stuff, or you're running a company, it inspires me more than just crossing the finish line first, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Hard to explain.
And that's what motorsport is all about, isn't it? It's not just about the driver, like F1. So people focus on just the driver. There's a whole team of hundreds of people back from the factory building the cars to the mechanics at the track. And again, obviously the drivers, but there's so much more behind the scenes that people don't quite realise. And it is a team sport.
100%. Yeah, it's and drivers do forget it. They think it's all about them, and they don't even learn their mechanic's name. And it's I'll tell you what, the industry is quite funny because it's so, every relationship so short term. Like a race team is there, obviously they need cash to survive.
Yeah,
a driver brings that cash, so you pay the team to run your car, and then next year you go off to a different team. So it doesn't really, as you're trying to climb the ladder, it's very, I'm here for a year, I'm using you, you're using me. And it's not really said that in the contract, obviously. But then I move on, and it's a strange thing. So it's difficult, or it's easy, should I say, for a driver to think, I'm just in and out, I don't really care. I only do 10 weekends a year with these people. But actually, when you get a driver that is very good at making an impact in a team and driving them forward and developing the car and putting everything into it, it's a game changer, because you see the team then work better for the driver in that season, or if they stay with them for 2 seasons or so. And it's a whole different experience. They'll go that extra mile. So it's something that drivers at a young age don't even realize, to be fair, but it's so important.
Definitely, because if you're building that relationship, like you say, the driver will work harder for the team and the team will work harder for the driver, and it just sort of improves and improves and improves.
The driver drives everything. Like the motivation and the impact of the team is all on them, really. They set the atmosphere, if you like.
Yeah.
So yeah, vital.
Brilliant. And moving on, over the past few years, whether it be in when you were driving or you're coaching, what different barriers have you experienced, and how did you overcome them, if you did overcome them?
I think it's always personal. It's always, I've got the skill, but can I do it when it matters? You know, whether it's speaking in front of an audience, you're doing like a speaking gig, or it's actually the driver, it's qualifying time. I've done it in practice and I'm not sure if I can get it all together now. And what if I don't, and they go down that road? Or if they've qualified really well, they have 10 seconds of elation saying, yeah, I'm pole position. Then the rest, the next 2 hours of dreading that start and if I mess it up. So that, I would say it's always, and it's nerves, it's how you view it, the opportunity that you've got, but it all comes down to performing under pressure. I'd say it's the biggest hurdle. And it's the same if you're coaching, you know, there's a big weekend coming up and the driver's nervous and you, it does actually, it bleeds into you. So then you have to control your emotions that then bleeds into the driver, because you're teaching the mental skills to deal with it, of course. But still, it's that feeling you get that the words can't describe in the atmosphere. You've got to make sure that that's created really in an energetic and confident way, rather than everyone feels the atmosphere is nervous and they're on edge.
Yeah.
So I reckon the biggest hurdle is always personal. It's being you and extracting the most out of you when it matters.
Yeah.
So obviously that's, I could say it's when you go for an interview and things like this, but it's not, you keep bringing it down to the personal side, the mental side. Execution basically is the biggest hurdle for most people.
Definitely. And we're all so different. I mean, even in the top leagues, like you say, you see it where they qualify really, really well. As soon as they get into the race, they just drop back down. And it's a massive mental game with yourself and preparing yourself and trying not to get in that negative spiral, because as soon as you start thinking negatively, it will affect your performance. And it, like I say, it will bleed into the rest of the team as well.
You got it. And you see it in their physiology as well. As soon as someone thinks a thought, even though their body only shifts like a millimeter, or their breathing starts to speed up if they're getting worried, or their head goes down if they're starting to get a bit, lose faith and self-belief. It's them little bits, that the little signals you send to the mind. So it's obviously what you think, but it's how you hold the body and the facial expression. And if that matches up with what you're thinking, you'll deliver an emotion. So it's very important that it's controlled on the physical side as well, because without getting too deep, we've got neurons in our heart all over and they're all communicating all the time. So, and emotions are very much in the body. So it is a case of teaching drivers to master that part, because it runs the show. You know, you take the brain out, you haven't got much left. There's drivers, Billy Munger driving without legs. There's a chap in Le Mans not long ago, not even with arms and legs and still competing.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, so we can do it without the limbs, but you take the mind out and it's game over. So yeah, it's obviously the most important part.
Definitely. And you see it in psychology as well. For example, I think everyone's experience of time of stress and how it affects you physically. You start to feel sick, you start to feel your breathing going, and it does have such a link up together from your mind and your body. There is a huge link towards the two.
It is mind and body. I mean, you take care of them before you get in the car each time. And obviously if you need to refresh at the start of each lap, so you get like an anchor, a link, a trigger to the start finish line, a big deep breath, a smile on your face, focus towards the first corner. Well, I've got to do the first corner again. Just that alone, and it helps you maintain and keep where you want to be until you then you forget, because you get into the rhythm and you're fine. But yeah, it's drivers don't spend enough time on it really. But the ones that do, the ones that do it naturally as well, they are ahead of everybody else usually. Definitely. Or they get the best out of themselves, put it that way.
And there is a big push at the moment towards mental health, mental ability, and everything like that. And I think it's really starting to shine through in motorsport now and having a proper understanding of it, whereas 10 years ago, it wasn't as big a deal, perhaps.
Yeah. And it's a fine line. Like everything in sport, I call it a millimeter sport, but it really is. From going like depressed or semi-depressed, I won't say deep depression, but semi-depressed or lack of self-belief to belief, depression to happiness, it's such a tiny shift as well. But people think it's like, oh no, I'm gonna have to change everything, I don't think I can do it. But it's surprising how quick and simple it is to change your emotions. So if you train it outside the car and have your own techniques of getting to whatever emotional state you want, then you can use it and pull them triggers whenever you like.
Brilliant.
And deal with issues that, you know, where they actually stem from, you can do that work outside the car, obviously. But there's plenty of mental patches, should we say, that drivers use a lot.
So sticking with the whole idea of change over the years, have you seen a big change in motorsport, and more specifically towards women as well?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely. I mean, women in motorsport 10 years ago and before had to be really thick skinned and not take anything seriously, because it, without sounding incorrect, because I don't think I am, it was like working with builders in a way, if you know what I mean. Do you get what I mean by that? No. Yeah, you can say things, everybody's sensitive nowadays, but you, I think you get what I'm on about. It was wolf whistling and and lots of jokes, and the women just had to put a smile on it. But now it's funny how that's changed. Now the men are keeping quiet and they're behaving themselves a bit more, and the girls are giving them hard times.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've seen that change, definitely. It was very old school in racing. It was very behind the game, but actually they've sped up over the last, let's just say, 4 years. You can see a change if you really want to look for it. But it's nice. It's equal now. It seems more equal. I'm sure there's plenty of women that say, no, we've still got some way to go, which is perfectly fine, because it's, you know, I see it from a man's point.
Yeah.
I don't see what's going on as much. But yeah, I think it's just in the world in general.
Yeah.
And I think things change quick now because of social media thing. If there's, say, if it's a new way of behaving in general, in culture, especially on where we are in this part of the world, it bleeds very fast. Everyone sees it on their phone. This is how you're supposed to behave now, good or bad, but that's just the way it is now. So things change very quickly.
Definitely.
You can go to certain parts of the world, obviously, and it's just how it was 50, 60, 70 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's not everywhere, but yeah, the developed worlds, should we call them, it's changed a lot. For the better.
We're in a very fluid society, like you say. One moment you look at your phone and I'm trying to think of an example, drinking water is really cool, and then the next minute they're like, no, actually you should be drinking tea every day. And it's so fluid and ever changing. It's hard to keep up sometimes.
It is, but not a lot has changed really. It's like the basic rules of how a human is healthy mentally and physically has probably been the same forever. So now we're going back to diets that they did in the caveman days, aren't we, to try and say, okay, this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's trends, it's headline reading, you know, it's clickbait, it's everywhere now. So it is quite difficult to know what to do when you're searching for the edge, should we say.
It's hard to find the right answer, almost. Like you say, going on to diets, there is so much out there. There's all these silly shake companies and pyramid schemes even, and so many different people telling you different things. Some say don't eat carbs, some say don't eat fats, and it's all over. It's trying to find, I think, where you personally fit and what suits you and where you slot into society, rather than putting your pressure to conform to everyone.
I mean, there's plenty of sciences out there. It's not my area, but I had a driver who went to a doctor, and this doctor transforms people's bodies basically in LA through diet, not through surgery, said LA. But he said people are carb efficient, or, you know, sugar efficient, and all these things, or fat efficient. So it's like, okay, you've got different body types, so this diet fits you and this one fits you. And it's like, oh, okay, then that's even more confusing. But if you're eating your greens and having plenty of water, I think you're pretty good to go.
Exactly. Protein, carbs, your greens, and
you're pretty much sorted. Yeah, you got it.
So obviously your whole, I'm trying to think, mantra almost is building champions. So when you're looking at doing that with a driver, and you get a new driver or even an existing driver you've been working with, what are the key focuses with that?
Right, so normally it starts with I've got a big spreadsheet basically with different areas of a driver's career or what they need to be good at. So obviously it starts with their goals, and we go through that, and the kind of person that needs to know their goals, where they are now, and the kind of person that could pull this off to go from where they are now to where they want to be. So we kind of design the whole plan around that, and then after all this we break it down to manageable goals. Obviously then we go into the driving, every single part of the driving, and monitor and score, basically. So it's very subjective to start with, how they are in the braking, the high speed corners, low speed. So I get a really good overview of where they are right now. And if their engineer that they're currently with can sit in on that part. That's great, because then we get the truth of where they're at driving wise.
Yeah.
Then mental, we move on to the mental side. It's quite a long assessment that I do with them. I'm really trying to decode them. So when they're at the best, what are they thinking? How are they operating? And when they're at their worst. So we can paint two different pictures to get to know them. Then they do a psychometric test, kind of. They just score themselves in different areas. So then I get a real good snapshot of how they are mentally. Then we go into their environment. How are they living? What is their living environment like? Their work ethics, how they're spending their hours, their knowledge, how well do they know the tracks that are coming up? So it's quite thorough, but I get a really good spread.
Yeah.
But the slight challenge is it's from their point of view. Mm-hmm. So they'll say, oh, my braking's not too bad. It's 8 out of 10. But then when you go and watch them, it's barely 5. So it's a bit subjective to start with. But then as you develop the relationship and do reviews and previews before each round, so you say, okay, these were the three areas that we struggled with in the last race. Let's make them into goals for this coming race weekend or test. So then you start to evolve. And after about a month or so, you've really got a good picture of the driver. Yeah. And then you develop a training program that's just for them. So yeah. When I say training, I mean, okay, now we're going to do some sim work and we're going to work on pressure. I'm going to follow you around a lap and then put you under pressure and see if you can still do that lap time.
Yeah.
I'm going to invite other drivers and we're going to do quali sims. So it depends really on what the driver needs.
Yeah.
Some need confidence outside the car to lead the team better. Some are stupidly quick naturally, but they just haven't got the work ethic then.
Yeah.
Because it just comes to them. So you have to teach them that side. So it's very individual. So it starts off very formal with scores and things. And then we do a review, sort of like a quarterly review to see if it's getting better in that area and to make it more precise. And it's ever evolving then. It never stops. And then when you move to a new car, like a bigger car with different people working, it's then opens up another layer.
Yeah.
Really, to be fair. So I'd say with juniors, it's normally, if I've got carters, it's more mental, believe it or not.
Okay. Because
I don't know much about driving technique of a kart.
Yeah.
I never did any karting. So I know the basics, but not each chassis, how it needs to be driven, each track. So I keep that to the mental side for the kids.
Yeah.
When they get to cars, it becomes more driver coaching. This is how you drive a car, with a bit of mental. But then as they grow up and they've really got the driving down, it's then 100% mental and keeping them in the space they need to be mentally. So it sort of goes through different phases.
That's really, really interesting. It's quite fascinating.
Very in-depth.
The depth that it has.
Yeah, it's evolved really, because I suppose when you, as a coach, you always study people that have done it well.
Yeah.
And you take down the traits and you think, right, you need to have this to be a champion. And you become this massive code. But actually, and then you can benchmark that with a driver and say, right, I can see that this driver's getting results. I can see that you're not really good in that area. Maybe we should work on that. It starts kind of like that to start with. But then you become up with your own science over the years. So I've been doing it since 98 now, really, coaching. Proper coaching since 2004, but coaching in general since 98. So you just get your own system.
Yeah.
Should we say?
Your own flow.
It's all manageable and measurable. And you can show them that they're getting better or not in certain areas.
That's really, really interesting. It's so fascinating.
Good.
that you don't necessarily see. And I think the level I'm at anyway, you don't have that in-depth knowledge as such. You have sort of the V-box and bits like that, but it's never opened up that whole aspect to it and how far it can really go and how bigger an impact it can have on your performance.
Yeah, it is. It's trying to develop the person so they can become a driver.
Yeah.
Because there is a certain mold, you know, there's certain non-negotiables that the champions really do have, like the work ethic, like the ruthlessness. And we're seeing it a lot. And actually, that video I just recorded, I was talking about how, not dirty, but how aggressive they are on track. You see Schumacher, he was driving people off. You see Verstappen and Hamilton, you've got two there that have got the boxing gloves on, right? So they keep forcing each other off. So you basically put yourself in a position where the other guy has to make a decision. Do you want to crash or are we going to get through this corner? And when both of them don't relent, Senna was great for this as well, it becomes a mess.
Okay.
And people can't understand it. They think these champions are perfect people, but it's not. They are nasty pieces of work. When you, if you're trying to take their bread, they're going to fight you for it. And if you're like that as well, it always ends up in a shunt.
Yeah.
Eventually. We've had three this year, right? Where it's sort of got a bit with them too. So yeah. Yeah, it's going to be great to watch, but
makes good entertainment.
Yeah. I mean, if they were just like what people say they want them to be, very clean, all they did is overtake on DRS, I think we'd be very bored, right?
Very. So,
but it's good. All the opinions of whose fault it is each time. I love it. I feed off that.
Yeah, seeing the different viewpoints and people arguing against each other about getting so passionate about it is very entertaining.
Yeah, especially the Silverstone one. That really kicked off, didn't it? But yeah, I mean, if either one of them just gave each other more space, it wouldn't have happened, basically. That's what you can put it down to.
Definitely. They just, neither of them want to back out. And I think that's their determination. Yeah. They're like, no, you're going to have to back out. But the other one's thinking the same. And then it just ends up in a big mess.
And it happens in like a split second as well. So it's not like it's premeditated, I'm going to take you out. It's like, it's done.
Yeah.
At them speeds. And you can't see much. You know, you've got a tiny little opening in your helmet.
Yeah.
Got the halo there. You've got obviously all the surrounds. You can't move because of the hands device. You've got tiny mirrors. So what you can take in is not like the helicopter view. It looks so obvious. And when you're in it and you say if it's even your fault and you hit somebody, you are sure it was their fault.
Yeah.
Because you saw the gap and maybe it closed. But then when you watch the replay after, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I know. Again,
believe it or not, he says the same.
Yeah, well, with the current, I can't think of the right word, crash, that's it, with Hamilton and Verstappen, so many people are sort of having a go at Verstappen for walking off. But like you say, when you're in the moment, you've got all those emotions, anger, it's their fault. Yeah. And I think personally, he did the right thing by taking that time out so he can then approach the situation in a calmer manner, make sure he's okay. But in that moment, like with Bottas and George, I can't remember which race that was, but...
There was a bit of
a scrap there because it was all focused on that in the moment emotion. So I think sometimes it is good to take that second out, go look at the outside footage and have that informed decision rather than that in the 3 second moment anger.
You got it. Yeah, the driver will come back absolutely fuming and just convinced that they were taken out. And you watch it like, mate, I watched a completely different thing here. It was definitely your fault. But you can't say that at the time. You have to wait for it to simmer. And then you show them, but it's different from your perspective.
So we've touched already a bit on mental performance, but like you say, how important is the mental performance in making that champion driver?
I think it's everything. I mean, when you sort of like ask somebody how a driver is, you know, you go to a race team and you've ran this driver. What was he like? Tell me, or she like, and it's they'll always talk about the mind first. They won't say, oh, he was really good at lap times, or oh, she was really good at warming up tires. Nothing like that. It's the person, the character, and the mental side first. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and they were stupidly quick as well. It's normally like that. So I think that shows you how important it is just by what people say. But it's having the ability and then not being able to do it on demand, like we said, or... having negative thoughts just at the right moment when you need to perform, you need to execute, but you're double thinking. These are the things that make a big difference. Yeah. I mean, you can be a second off, right? And you're thinking, I don't know how to crack it. I don't know how to overcome it. But you just lack a tiny bit of knowledge of how the exit of turn 4 is really important, or the entry of turn 10 is really important. So that's knowledge, still mind.
Yeah.
And it's knowledge, but you keep cracking on doing the same thing and ruining the exit. It's like all you have to do is brake a bit earlier. And honestly, 3/10 done. And you're always closer than you think. Yeah. So it's either the knowledge side in the brain, or it's the performing as you can and letting you perform without double thoughts or negative thinking or lack of self-belief. So it's everything, isn't it? Yeah. If you can turn the wheel, you got physical strength. And you can hit the brake hard enough if it's a Formula car, because you have to really slam the brakes in them, then I think everything else is okay.
Right. Like you say, it's almost approaching it rather than, I can't find that 1 second. You've got to approach
there,
it. How can I find that 1 second? What do I need to do to improve? And keep asking the questions to grow and develop, because there will be answers for them, and it's not impossible. You've just got to work it out.
That's language, right? Internal language. So the questions you ask yourself and the statements that you say when you're in the car are really important. Not like, so if you can't find that second, you know, literally saying that, I can't find it, I can't do it, I'm driving as fast as I can, the car won't let me. These beliefs that you're stacking, your mind's going to give up. It's going to start to say the other guy or the other gal is cheating, they've got a better engine, something's going on, you're not setting the car up as good as my car up as good as theirs. All this stuff comes in, then it's really mental. It's done. It's game over. But if you're going around, you can see the lap time's terrible. You're like, okay, there is an answer. There's an equation here. There's something I'm missing. Is it turn one? What did my coach tell me or someone tell me before? Oh, yeah, I was actually braking too early last time. Maybe I should take it a bit deeper. You go through the corner. Some cars have got delta, so you see immediately if it's worked. So that's really nice. And then you're like, okay, it worked. So that's ticked that off. Now I've got another 6 tenths to find. And then you start to be more productive.
Yeah.
And resourceful. And that's what it's about, really, being resourceful in the car. No matter how many smacks in the faces you've taken in that race, it's coming back like a robot to say, right, this is what I've got to do now.
Definitely. I think one driver in F1 that's really good at that is Perez. Because how many times he started right at the back of the grid and he works his way through, whereas people sometimes like Hamilton are there like, oh, my tires are shot, I've not done that well, and
a
bit of difference for those that will fight it through to those that kind of expect to be at the front, and when they're not, it's not their fault almost.
It's going at it like an AI, like a robot, where there's less emotion but more analytical thinking about how, you know, problem solving, should we say.
Yeah.
And you have got a bit of artistry in driving, of course. You're feeling, you're like freehand drawing, but there is also a calculation side of it. I'm trying to crack this code of the lap time. And there's someone out there doing it, so I'm going to watch them and see how they're doing it or follow them. But the answers are there somewhere. It's just remaining patient when it's giving you no love back, you know. You'll find out. It's difficult, but that, I think, is a good skill, one of the main skills, really.
Yeah, it's being determined and making sure you keep pushing until you find that answer, rather than falling at the first hurdle almost.
You got it.
Brilliant. So kind of almost a little bit onto the mental side, but going into memories, what is your favourite memory out of all your motorsport career, whether that's coaching, driving?
Oh, I think one in the car would be, I won a Alfa Romeo race at Donington from P28. That was great, but basically it was a full reverse grid. So I won the first race, or second, I can't remember, and then it's a full reverse, which was really random. So you had to pick your way through, and just about did it. So that was cool because it was a car that shouldn't have won. It was nice. And I think TRS, Toyota Racing Series with Liam Lawson 2 years ago in New Zealand. It was a really tough championship. Him and Armstrong were going for it. And everyone was watching. It was the time, and it got him his Red Bull deal in winning it. So it was really cool. It was a nice, watching him sign the Red Bull contract in a cafeteria on the Monday after was really nice, after all the hard work. But it was so pressureful. Oh, it was unbelievable. And in the last race, he won it, but because the guy in front, who was a title contender, Armstrong, he had a 5 second penalty because he pushed Liam off in the race. So then Liam just had to stay within the 5 seconds, and they were both pushing. And you didn't know who was going to win till the last lap, basically. So yeah, them kind of, I've got a few of them actually, but they're the ones that stick when it's a fight and you just about come out the top, on top, or not, you know, you lose, but it's just an epic fight. It's like a movie, really, the story that builds up to it.
Makes it more rewarding as well if you've had to fight for it, rather than just leading the grid for the whole race nice and easy with loads of gaps. If you've actually had to fight for it, you think, no, I have worked hard for this, I deserve this now.
Yeah. I think one more was, I was at Indy 500 with Ed Jones and he got third place, but he could have won it.
Yeah.
But he broke the tip of the nose off on the Indy car. And obviously you can imagine at that speed, it catches the air. So you haven't quite got the straight line speed, but he was quick enough to win and we're all on our edge of our seats. But he came third in the end in his rookie year. So that was great. It's another one that stands out.
Oh, fantastic. So moving on, looking back from the past now to the future, what are your future aspirations?
aspirations are just to keep going, to help drivers in any way. And I think it's just leading me into management, sort of management of drivers, helping them in any way possible. So there's no end goal for me at the minute.
Yeah.
It's just keep going, keep delivering for drivers and just see what happens, because I'm enjoying doing it. So I think that just keep, I put as much pressure on the driver to improve as much as I do in the coaching. So it's like an ongoing thing, really. So who knows where it'll go.
That's exciting. I bet it's quite exciting to see how far it'll go and how far it'll keep developing as well.
It is. I might just end up as a surfing instructor. You don't know.
Complete life change.
Yeah. I'll be quite happy with that. It's the same things.
I need to use that on the beach with like a cocktail in a coconut shell.
There you go. Best of both worlds.
Exactly. Saying how much you love the job, what is your favourite part of the job?
I think it's the one-on-one training when the driver opens up and tells you what's really going on.
Yeah.
They cut past all the crap, all the excuses. It's not even like winning or anything. When you get a result at the end of a race, you see him on the podium, it's great. You know, the family are loving it. But it's like straight away my head's on what's next. What have we got to improve? I don't quite like how he did the start. Don't quite like how she was easily overtaken. You know what I mean? Something. There'll be something there working away. But it's when they try something, it works, and they have an epiphany, and they get they gain more self-belief.
Yeah.
I think it's that bit. It's the progress. So if you can imagine this, you go, it's related to the goal thing you just said, you know, the aspirations. I think it's just progress. So anytime someone makes progress or makes a new distinction that helps them, that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. You know,
and
you're doing your job
right. The next one. So it never stops.
Keeps on going.
Yeah, it does. It keeps going. So you get literally addicted to progress.
It's almost like a drug then.
Yeah.
So as a driver coach, what do you think are the top three skills or qualities it takes to make a racing driver?
Resourcefulness, like I say. So it's always coming up with answers when other people can't.
Yeah.
So you're seen through the limiting beliefs and everything. The work ethic is massive.
Mm.
If they don't put the work in, it's okay if you've got the skill, the speed, but that only gets you so far.
Yeah.
And I think the big one is people skills.
Yeah.
Persuasion skills, you know, getting people to say yes. If you're trying to get a drive, you've got to sell yourself. You've got to sell yourself to sponsors, getting all the team to back you more than the teammates sometimes. If you can get more people to say yes, you're going to have more opportunities.
Yeah.
The only thing stopping you getting to F1 is someone's going to say no, right?
Yeah. That's the worst.
So if I can make more people say yes, then I'm going to get what I want. Yeah. And they get what they want. So I think, people skills and leadership is all wrapped up into that.
Oh, fantastic. And the very last question.
Yeah.
So for all those out there wanting to make it, whether it be into coaching or into driving, what is your best advice?
Oh, give me a bit more color to that question.
So
what would you like to know about it?
So for myself, obviously my goal is to win Formula Woman and make it into the GT Cup. What would be your best advice for me moving forward to reach that goal and what to focus on improving?
Okay. I would say applicable preparation. So if you know there's, like you said, I think it was before the video, wasn't it? Before we recorded, about going to the simulator and doing as much as you can. That's the kind of stuff you can do. It's kind of being creative on the prep side, because you can't get on track very much. So it's like, how can I prepare in a way, whether it's sim training, whether it's doing some track days, which I think you're doing as well, anything I can to prepare me. So when I am in the car, it's more natural. I'm not starting from square one. And it's the same when they're going for sponsorship as well. If I'm not very good at speaking to people, I've got to go and prepare and be better at that.
Yeah.
And somehow I've got to be creative and make that happen. So I think that's all it is. It's trying to create and give yourself the skills before it's actually showtime.
Yes.
So when you're there, you're just repeating rather than doing everything for the first time. And I think that's the best way. So it's preparation. But yeah, you got to be creative really to do it sometimes with our sport.
It's having it so there's less to take in. So if you're obviously for the assessment, for example, if you're in a new car on a new track, obviously in a new environment being assessed with it all, it's all quite overwhelming. Whereas if you've driven the car before, you've gone around the track a few times and you've sat in with a coach before, you kind of understand what to expect. There's less sort of pressure and you're just like, yep, I just got to go drive now, rather than being like, oh my God, how do you do this car? What's it like? What's the track? Where's the corners? It's just natural, like you say.
It is. And I don't know if you're like me, but I always seem to screw things up the first time. And the second time, it just because you've done it, you can anticipate things a bit better. You just seem to do it easily. And I constantly do that. So yeah, I think it's how you do that without actually doing the activity.
Yes.
So you have got to be quite clever working it out, even visualization, you know, anything like that. But going towards anything like a shootout, just, I think I said this to you before, just to really enjoy it.
Yes.
But I'm going to take this in, and it doesn't matter if I win or lose, I'm going to go there and give it everything. Exactly. And then you take the pressure off, because there is no win or lose anymore. It's just, and then you'll perform better, basically.
Staying better. I think that's what I've said as well with the whole competition. As long as I've gone there and I can come away and say I've done everything I physically and mentally possibly could, you can't be mad at yourself then. And that's, I think, the way you've got to look at it and have it as a learning experience. And without this competition, there's so much that wouldn't have happened and probably wouldn't be on track as much thanks to all sponsorship and the whole journey of it all. So it's got to be grateful and of the learning experience as well as hopefully winning the drive.
Exactly. Yeah. So get in there and enjoy it.
Definitely. Well, you survived. That's it.
I survived. That was 20, was it? Jeez.
That
okay.
Not too scary. Was it still the scariest thing you've done?
Nah, it's fine. It's cool.
Well, thank you ever so much for taking the time to join me today. It's been really enjoyable and I've definitely learned a lot.
Thank you very much for having me. And good luck with everything.
Thank you. So you guys know the drill. We're here every Monday at 6 p.m. So make sure you like, follow, subscribe to make my journey your journey. And I'll see you next time. Bye.